Good evening at 5 o'clock in the UK on a dark and miserable, to be quite honest, Tuesday, 5th of January. But we'll try to bring some brightness to your early evening or whatever time of day it is for you when you watch this live or later or listen on a podcast. My first guest of the year, I've never spoken to, we'd literally just logged on about 30 seconds ago, is the one and only Nick Parker, author of the famous That Explains Things newsletter. And I was introduced to Nick obliquely in chatting after recording an earlier What Comes Next show with Rob Poynton. And I since found by looking up, Nick, that you were somebody else who'd signed up to go on Rob's reading weekends.
Yes.
So, yeah. Which were, of course, cancelled because of the pandemic, but I was looking forward to go there. So I either have an interesting set of coincidences or I need to widen my circle even further.
Well, I sort of feel like all roads lead back to Rob Poynton in many ways.
It seems so. And just to open up, I was sent, my aunt loves to, somebody was saying the other day on Twitter that they can never actively listen to a podcast, they have to be doing something. So my aunt listens to this show on a podcast later in the week every week while doing the ironing, which I think is quite brilliant.
Amazing.
So she'll catch this in a couple of days. So in the mail, I received from her a copy of your new book on reading, which I thought I better read it before I get on with
you. Deserve.
And I did. And I also now have the best quality notebook I had. All right. And I'll do a slightly, and this is full of tips on how to read more. Provocations, consolations, and suggestions for reading more freely. So I'll start out with this because it is your new book. And I'll read this because it's the first thing I've written in a book which on its spine says the word,
very good.
Says the word wisdom tattoos. Although it is nice to make some notes shortly after reading a book, it doesn't so much help you remember more as notice more. So write a summary or identify a few of your favorite paragraphs and copy them out longhand into a good notebook. Editor's note, as I just have. It feels like you're tattooing wisdom onto your very soul. Then you turn the page onto the next snippet, very much in the Seth Godin school of book writing. Although you're not actually tattooing wisdom onto your soul, you'll forget stuff just the same. Most of it, in fact. But browsing and rereading a notebook of favorite paragraphs is in itself one of the most pleasurable types of reading there is. And I closed the book for the podcast listeners. So that's the first longhand entry.
Magic.
My wisdom tattoo.
Very good.
And it just, before I get in, it brings me a thought. I got into coaching well over a decade ago, and one of the masters who taught me a lot, it's a guy from Brighton, well, Australian from Brighton, called Tanner, Ron Tanner. And every time we went on a learning conference or training or anything like this, at the end of each day or each session, he would write a key learning on a page, just a bullet point or a paragraph. And he'd been doing it for 20 years. And he says, every so often, I just pick up the book and open it at random to a key learning, and it's always the one I need on that day.
That's very nice.
So I thought it was cool. So anyway, there's never any particular agenda other than the fact I've been looking forward to chatting to you from the odd dialogue on Twitter and even spied a couple of my daily posts. Over to you.
Well, it's really interesting hearing you read that. And so what I've noticed, so I wrote a bit of context for your listeners. So this book on reading came about because someone on Twitter, who I didn't know, just asked the question. So, you know, readers, what tips do you have for reading more books? And after about the seventh or eighth time of me hitting reply and sort of adding a thought, I realized I'd got quite a lot to say on this topic. So I wrote that week's newsletter on the subject, and Matt just got this enormous outpouring of both sort of enthusiasm and like recognition from people, and this idea that reading is, well, like, it's such a personal thing. Obviously, if you read, we, like us readers, we read a lot, but obviously it's mostly a solitary thing. And so it means that because it's not something that happens out in the open, despite the fact that we all like to think we live examined lives, it's one of those weird pockets of our life that we don't examine. I realise I've sort of got form in this. Like about 15 years ago, I wrote a book about toast, as in grilled bread, which I wrote partly as a sort of piss take of, at the time, there was a sort of whole genre of books which were like very sort of niche micro histories, like salt, cod. I think it started with a book called Longitude. There was a brilliant book called One Good Turn, which was a history of the screw by Witold Rybinski, which is a fantastic book. And I just thought it'd be funny to write a book that was a sort of micro history of toast. But what I realized with that, sort of like stumbled into it as I was writing it, is like I'd say to people, so I'm writing a book about toast, and they'd look at me like I was nuts. And then within about 3 seconds, this sort of enormous outpouring of, you know, well, I'll tell you how I like toast, and I'll tell you how you can't make toast, and what you must never do when you're making toast. And what it occurred to me is that toast is like solitary food. You never make it for other people.
Right.
It's not like, oh, I'll have a dinner party, let's pop the toaster in the middle of the table and put a few slices down. So it's a food that you have all these very personal feelings about, but you don't share them with anyone. And it occurs to me that reading is quite similar. We have lots of our own sort of personal assumptions or hang-ups. You know, are you the sort of person who feels at some sort of molecular level like one must finish the book you're reading before you start the next one? Even if you don't really do that, even if you feel guilty about that, it's somehow sort of deeply ingrained in you. And like, it just seems to be one of those things that because I struggled to be a kind of free reader, and then started sort of playing, having these little games and experiments with myself. That's like, it was just amazing that so many other people said, actually, yeah, I realize I've got loads of hang-ups about reading. Even so, Rob Poynton, who we've already talked about, who is, you know, one of the most voracious and omnivorous readers I know, was like, this has completely changed how I think about reading. So it's fab. And I just love that idea that there are still pockets of our lives that we've not thought to examine. It's really fascinating.
I love that as a broad theme, and let's get onto that in a minute, perhaps. It's like, you know, the unexamined life and the examined life, and the elements of it, like toast because solitary food. And before I do, it just makes me think, and for the video, either live or later, I've been feeling really guilty about this book. Right. And it's called There's Only One Danny Garvey by David F. Ross.
Yeah.
David F. Ross is a good friend of mine, a polymath, you know, of many, many different varieties. But the biggest thing for me is he works in an architectural design practice in Glasgow where Charles Rennie Mackintosh worked. And I'm a massive fan of Charles Rennie Mackintosh. So when I went to the office, I was such a fanboy, I couldn't concentrate on the meeting. But David wrote this book and he sent me a pre-release copy and I'm only a quarter of the way through it. And he sent it to me about 2 months ago and it got released, I think, yesterday. All right. So it's like, I've got to finish the book. I've got to read the book. And I love it. It's great. But so many things in your book, and I've seen the snippets on before you published the book. And one of them was the unit of reading is a chapter. And I absolutely adored that.
Yeah.
You know, just read a chapter at a time. And there's also a reason I'm upstairs in my office, right, with David's book, because I figured, well, just having read your book a couple of days ago, I went, well, I could just have books all over the place. And this can become the desk book.
Yeah.
And I'll pick it up and read a couple of pages.
Yeah.
There was, I have.
You never feel bad about, like, well, I'll spend 5 minutes on Twitter then between calls and things.
Yeah, so I just pick up a book.
Well, 5 minutes to read a page. Yeah.
And, but I have actually struggled and, with reading actual books. My kids would joke about the movie Talladega Nights. It says, oh, we got as one of them their readers. or was it another? That's the wrong accent for a Southern movie. That's somehow Southwest or something. I don't know what that was about. But, you know, I really struggled with it. And part of it is because I started writing every single day well over 3 years ago. And it's a different form of habit to get into. And I actually find it pretty easy to write a blog every day. Now, some of them are really short. Some are much more considered and longer. But I've got various methods around it. I make notes, I do different things, and I realize I make notes, and then I realize I've not written about that topic for a week, so I'm not gonna. There's going to be something else comes up. Yeah. But I talked to a writer and speaker called Nilufer Merchant from California. And I was on a call with her a couple of years ago, and she's written loads of books. And she says, well, that's probably because you've got a book in you.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I says, when I've got a thought I'm trying to develop into a book, I can't really read any other books in a vaguely similar vein because I feel like it kind of, I've got to focus on my book.
Yeah.
An element to which I tend to average about an hour a day writing.
Yeah.
Right. And that's time I'd read.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Anyway, it's, so that's what's now. So there's, my dear friend Rosie von Lila had a, talked about what comes now, right?
Yeah.
So, and she was, when I came up with what comes next, she was going, it's kind of, you just nicked my title, you know? but what comes now is your book's out and a couple other things. And I note that you're actually sitting there with a busted leg.
Yeah. God.
But what comes now? What comes now, and then what from that present? What comes next, Nick?
So, well, given that you're a coach, I thought I'd approach this like a coaching session.
Fine.
Well, I don't know. So, I think there's an interesting thing for me as a, let's say, me as a writer, in that. So, potted history of my career. I worked for a magazine called The Oldie for a very long time. The Oldie is a terrific magazine. Very funny, satirical, sort of small literary publishing, has a very strong identity and voice. And it's very easy when you work at somewhere like The Oldie, and like, you know, lots of people have this, you work at a small place that's on a mission, it feels like that sort of brand, you really closely identify with that brand yourself, and you can sort of find yourself in your place in that mission. Then I worked at an agency called The Writer that was similar. Then I set up my own thing called That Explains Things. And so the journey for me of the last year or two has been making that separation between what's me as a writer, as a copywriter, maybe, or somebody, you know, who writes for businesses and brands for money, and what is my own voice. And what I've been finding over the last year or so is my newsletter, which has been newly rebranded, you might or might not be interested to know, as the Journal of Messy Thinking. So... that's what I've been quietly doing over Christmas. So the Journal of Messy Thinking, like for the last year or so, my weekly newsletter has been, I think, the sort of most interesting thing I have written, in any given week and over the course of the year. And it has spawned things like, you know, this little book, and this little book is now a thing that is in the world. And I think, so what is next for me is just finding a way of sort of balancing those two things. There's the writing and the stuff that is my job and my agency. But really, the agency is just me. And then there's the stuff that is me and the things that I am more interested in. And it's one of the interesting things about, you know, so On Reading is self-published. Largely, that was a sort of pragmatic thing of I just wanted to get it out quickly while I was laid up with a broken leg. It feels like, well, there's at least a productive thing I can do. And through the magic of, you know, print on demand and Amazon, I could produce the thing and it can now be in the world without having to wait a year and find a publisher and all of that stuff. You know, there are obviously limitations to that as well. But it's now, how do I sort of get an audience for the book without becoming a sort of full-time marketer for the thing? You know, I don't want to, you know, there's no expectation that it becomes a sort of hugely successful thing, but I'd quite like it to do itself justice. And so, and also my realization of those, the things that I'm really drawn to, is that examining those bits of our lives that we don't realize we haven't looked at. So I'm always on the sort of, you know, my antenna is always up for, what that might be, like where's the next little thing that I can sort of turn my attention to. And then, so finally, also there is, my productivity, system. I feel like everybody needs a productivity system and mine is called Get the Fuck On With It. And I produced it as a joke a couple of years ago. It's a pack of cards. You get 50 cards in the pack. On every single card, it has the words, get the fuck on with it, printed on the cards. And the idea is that whatever you are procrastinating about, whatever project you wish you should be getting off, you hold it in mind, you shuffle the pack and you draw a card. You know in advance of drawing the card, it's going to tell you to get the fuck on with it. But it still works. The irony of this, Tom, is I made the prototype 2 years ago. I haven't done anything with it.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So that, like, I just think that would be fun to do next. And also by declaring it publicly to you, I've now forced myself into making it happen. So there you go. There's a quite a long answer to your question.
I have 6 words for you.
Let me write them down in my lovely notebook.
Are you ready?
Go on then.
You ready to write them down?
Hold on.
He's got a lovely notebook.
I'm using my Remarkable 2.
His Remarkable 2. I've heard of these Remarkable things. Electronic notebook. We can look up afterwards.
Honestly, we could do a whole hour-long podcast on the Remarkable 2 electronic notebook.
And the 6 words are...
Yeah.
Get.
Yeah.
The.
Yeah.
Fuck. On. With. Yeah. It.
There we go.
Excellent. Super.
For people listening to the audio version, I'm now holding up the words. Get the fuck on with it.
My favourite podcast is going back at least a decade, is two crotchety white English blokes doing movie reviews. It's on Radio 5. It's called Wittertainment because they witter on. It's Mark Kermode and Simon Mayo. And they keep forgetting that they don't have video. For the podcast listeners, I'm just gesticulating wildly with my big flappy hands, you know.
Very good.
So
that reminds me of the one of my favourite albums as a kid was the Muppet Show album. I don't know if you've ever heard it, but the sort of running joke throughout the whole thing is that they make no concessions to the fact that it's audio. So one of the shows, or one of the slots, is the Great Gonzo eating a rubber tire to while accompanied by the flight of the bumblebee. So what you get is all the way through. Brilliant.
So it's interesting. You kind of framed, and for whatever reason, jovial or otherwise, of take as the coaching sessions. I actually wrote things down.
Excellent.
So if I ask one question out of this. You've almost answered your own question, but you said that you've just rebranded the That Explains Things newsletter, which is the name of your agency, which is me as in Nick. And, I'll give it a name now. I'll call it the Journal of Messy Thinking. If you consider what you just downloaded, 3 or 4 different things, why separate you, the copywriter, and you, the person?
Well, I think, yes. You are right. And in a way, I think that is what the Journal of Messy Thinking is about, is sort of holding all of that stuff simultaneously as a big jumble and not trying to sort it all out, which is, you know, which is frankly both my strength and my weakness. In that the thing that clients are often paying me to do is take a massive big jumble of stuff. Mm-hmm. Listen to them for an hour and then go, you know, I think what you're really talking about is 3 things. Mm-hmm. And my tendency to sort of believe that life can be sort of sifted and sorted and turned into themes like that. It's perhaps too strong. Like sometimes it's just an incoherent bundle of stuff, isn't it? Which I then made more complicated for myself by, you know, giving my agency a name and an identity, despite the fact it's just me, which is a bit like, you know, it's like being badly drawn boy. Or it's a very done thing with artists now, isn't it? To give yourself a name that isn't your own name, despite the fact that it's still just you. So yeah, there is a thing there about drawing all of that stuff more closely together.
Hmm. When I was listening to you, so I'll flip out of coach mode because that's not really a thing here. So I'll join in the conversation. When I was listening to you, something occurred to me is I've got a call in a couple of days to somebody who just, using the American phrase, reached out to me. I joke that I speak English in multiple languages, right? English, Scots English, Caribbean English. And he's interested in, again, in the very small world, you may know Steve Chapman, a past guest on my show, and he talks about creative constraints. And the guy saw a blog I'd written about it, and he said, I'm really interested in complex adaptive systems. And those words automatically just get me going, too complex. So there is this concept from a guy called Dave Snowden called Kinefin around like a methodology for complex systems. But actually, the longer...
For audio listeners, I'm writing that down.
For audio listeners, he's writing that down, C-Y-N-E-F-I-N. And it's great. And organizational development people use it all the time. Right. But this, and it just, that occurred to me, when you were talking earlier, and I just kind of spun a play and put it to one side, but I'm bringing it back to the center of the conversation because for some people, they like to be able to name everything like that. And they like to build up a system in detail. They like to say, this is, I have to use this model and we do these tools and organizational development people, learning people, they do this stuff. Right. And I'm just a total fan of simplicity, right? What the quote is, you know, give me simplicity on the other side of complexity.
Yeah, yeah.
Da Vinci's line, simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. So I guess part of these, you know, one of the things I've done a lot over the years is I've kind of gotten known, it's all by referral, I've gotten known as the guy that business leadership teams bring in when the leadership offsite they did last year didn't really work.
Yeah, yeah.
And they knew what cut through and it goes, so what happened to what you did last year? Well, it's sitting on the shelf. And it's the strategy report and it's done by, and my running joke is I can tell by the font which of the big consulting firms. because they think they want 60 pages. And this is going to sound familiar to you because you've already said it on the call, right? What do they get at the end after I listen to them? I'm not, in your case as a copywriter, you might be consulting, but you're doing it almost in a coaching way. You're listening to them and trying to work out what's really going on for them.
Yeah.
What's the message they really want to communicate to their audience, et cetera. And if I'm working on strategy or vision or whatever it is with a business or a government ministry or whatever I work with, I just tell them at the beginning what they're going to get at the end of the 1 or 2 days. You're going to get one sheet of paper with a context and three areas you're going to focus on, but you'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so.
And on the other side, if they turn it over, does it say, get the fuck on with it?
It should. I think that's an augmentation I should add. I was being dead serious, but thanks for re-injecting humor. But actually I think I'm not a fan of binary thinking. I'm not a fan of either or, but I am a fan of abundant thinking. So I like both and. So I think the thing is you can be messy in your thinking and you can want to focus.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And so my recommendation for you would be either on your own or with some support, right? Sometimes coaches are useful, is to work out as we start the year, what's your context for the year? And
yeah.
What are your three things? If you did your own process on yourself, and at a certain, if you raise the context high enough, you create an alignment. And off the back of that, you go, well, actually, I don't have to separate me from my business, from my writing, from examining the unexamined. And from all of that, I think one of the concepts in Kinefin is emergent. Right?
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah.
So it will, things will emerge. You'll work out how to market, how to get the word out.
Yeah.
And I've just got, I mean, I've suddenly got the idea of you could do a daily tweet that simply is on a hashtag around unexamined life. And it could be a poll on what shade people like their toast. Or, you know, my partner has a particular way she likes her cup of tea. This is for somebody who's not that picky on most other things. If I make her a cup of tea, it has to be absolutely a certain shade, and there has to be a certain amount of tea in the cup, right? A certain amount of tea in the cup, right? And she always leaves a little bit in the cup.
Yeah.
And it's like, it makes me think that that is something which is actually an odd form of intimacy.
Yes.
Because I don't think anybody else in her life makes her a cup of tea.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So it's like, that's a totally unexamined bit. And you go, and I'm saying this, there'll be people who listen to this go, okay, how do I like my tea?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's lifting a veil.
Yeah.
On life. I think it's that could be a really cool access point into.
It's really fascinating. And it's, as you're talking as well, it makes me realize, you know, the idea of what's the context, what's the three themes. It occurs to me that part of the reason I'm probably drawn, I hadn't planned to talk to you about Get the Fuck On With It. But it seems to me, reflecting on it, that so there's a bit of my life which is about the client work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of that is this product I have, or this method I created called VoiceBox, which is about helping brands find their tone of voice. So that is very much me at, you know, here's a bit of insight to my opinion on the world and a model. That's me at my, you know, structure and themes. And yet there's a bit of me which is very George Box, you know, all models are wrong, but some models are useful. Then there's on reading, for those of you listening on audio, I'm holding the book up to the camera, as is Tom, which is me at the sort of whimsical, thoughtful bit of my personality. It's very important to me that that is a book that is about, you know, sort of being playful with the idea of exploring your own habits around reading. It is not how to be more productive as a reader, which is, you know, the sort of default mode for those kinds of things at the moment. So we've got sort of, you know, serious and strategic, and then we've got thoughtful and whimsical. The bit that's missing, theme three, is daft and funny, which is, you know, the other big part of my life and my personality. So it's really interesting that as we've been talking, that is the bit that has come up, because then you have, you know, within the jumble of stuff, you have the main bits of sort of who I am and my approach to life and work, I guess. You know, if you're going to work with me, it would be helpful. You would work out a lot about what you were going to get if you understood I've created Get the Fuck On With It productivity method, as well as written on reading. Either one of those things would leave a gap that is probably quite significant.
Pretty cool. So you've got those three themes, and it's funny. The next thing you would do under that is you'd then say, what are three things I'm actually going to do?
Okay.
Of course, Get the Fuck On With It. And then you end up with a one-page strategic plan. I've worked with businesses, you know, which are one-person businesses. So I've also worked with businesses which are tens of thousands around the world. They get the same thing, a one-page strategic plan. There's one word, and the other part of this, which you'll understand, is like it comes down to like things like messaging and what's the key words. The context is the why, it's the driver. What's this all about? That's the
yeah.
And when you look at the three themes, you go, well, what are they all? So the if you could joke of it as being the business of Nick Parker, all right? It's yeah. Like, and that's not business. It's just, it's holistic. It's all put together. It's like, well, you have those three areas you're looking at. What's that? What does that all mean for you right now?
Yeah.
You know? And I can see, I have a phrase that in every challenge, there's at least one opportunity. So we're all locked down, all right? There isn't an awful lot we can do in the next few months, and you've been literally unable to move with a bust leg.
Stuck on this chair.
On this chair for me.
Yes. Yeah,
and now holding up to the camera once again, flicking the pages in front of the directional mic, actually published this book. It's out in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes me think, why am I not writing my book?
Yeah, why haven't you broken your leg, Tom? Why haven't you broken
your leg? Why have I broken my leg? Then I would have written a book.
Come on. That's my other productivity method.
Break your leg.
Break your leg. I'll come round socially distanced. And then just push you down some steps.
Smash your leg with a hammer. Well, I have a term around pro. I'm a bit more serious. I do like to laugh, and belly laughs on this call, but I am a bit more serious sometimes. And, I do have this term called proactive resilience, because I cannot stand the winter, right? But actually the reason I can't stand the winter is the short days. I lived for 27 years in the Caribbean, where in midwinter it's 11 hours of daylight, in midsummer it's 13.
Amazing.
It doesn't really vary. So yeah. I have to prepare for that. So today was the first day I got on my bike indoors.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could come over and just push me off my turbo train and that would smash my leg. Anyway, that's been absolutely fantastic. Our half hour totally flew.
Magic. God, look, we're at time.
So I'm going to kick the audience off. And then you and I can maybe continue talking about stuff that's too messy for them.
Magic. Right. Well, lovely to talk at you, audience. It's been a total pleasure, Tom.
Cheers. Thanks, Nick.